Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the YDUQS video conference to discuss the results for the fourth quarter of 2024. This video conference is being recorded, and the replay can be accessed on the company's website, www.yduqs.com.br. The presentation is also available for download. Please be advised that all participants will only be watching the video conference during the presentation, and then we will start the Q&A session when further instructions will be provided. Before proceeding, we would like to clarify that any statements that may be made during this conference call regarding the company's business prospects, projections, and operational and financial goals are beliefs and assumptions of YDUQS' Board of Directors and the current information available to the company. Those statements may involve risks and uncertainties as they relate to future events and therefore depend on circumstances that may or may not occur. Investors, analysts, and journalists should take into account events related to macroeconomic environment, industry, and other factors that could cause results to differ materially from those expressed in the respective forward-looking statements. It is important to stress that for a better viewing of the presentation, it is recommended to enable full screen mode. Present at this video conference, we have Mr. Eduardo Parente, CEO of YDUQS, and Mr. Rossano Marques Leandro, CFO and Investor Relations Officer. I would now like to give the floor to Mr. Eduardo Parente, who will begin the presentation. Please, Mr. Parente, you may proceed. Good morning, everyone. Welcome to YDUQS' results presentation for the year 2024, the fourth quarter of 2024. 2024 is a year that we are very proud of what we have done, and I think that we have three things that we're going to share with you throughout this presentation, why we are so proud of this year. First, we continue to deliver a portfolio that we have built, very robust, which allows us to be strong in bad times and also leverage grow a lot in times. And we continue to operationally deliver the potential of this portfolio, which has generated very relevant financial results, both from the point of view of net income and cash generation. And we've did very good things with the money we generated during this period. So looking at the table here, we grew adjusted EBITDA for the year 6%. We had a margin expansion that, again, has a disciplined side of ours, which you know we are recognized for that, but it also has the side of the quality of the portfolio. And our portfolio, the fastest growing service lines are those that are most profitable. So there is a natural upward pressure within the portfolio. When we look at this set in operational terms, we had an important evolution within the fourth quarter. We generated more than 1 billion reais in operating cash flow in the year. But more importantly, within the second part operation generating, in the second part of the discussion here, very strong financial results. This is an evolution. They are still small. Consider what we see ahead and shy on what we talked about our YDUQS Day that we were going to deliver, but very relevant evolution versus last year, especially versus last year. When we look at our earnings per share, we moved from 118 to 173 this year. We had given a guidance between 160 and 2. We quite exceeded this guidance, even taking the number of shares we had at the time of the guidance. This number is still 165, so an evolution of 342 million reais to 480 million reais in net income, 40% versus last year. Just as important and more important than this is very important evolution in cash flow for shareholders. We move from 67 million last year, almost 300 million more, 362 million reais this year. When we take this, both this 1.7 per share, we're talking about 17% more or less the share price today, which has been generated in net income. On the cash flow side, we're talking about practically 12, 13% of our market cap today in cash flow generation for shareholders. What have we done with this money? What have we started doing with this money? First, we follow our trajectory towards deleveraging. We talk a lot about this. We want to get one net debt EBITDA in the near future. In the short term, what's happened here? First, we saw very relevant opportunity for buyback. We did the program here in 5 months. We repurchased 300 million reais in shares, a bit over 30 million shares repurchased. We canceled 15 million now in March, but we had canceled in 20 million in November. So we canceled more than the buyback program achieved. We are proposing to the general meeting a dividend payment of 150 million reais, so a relevant flow of money returning to shareholders at this time of high interest rates. I think it's very important. On the other hand, we have two acquisitions, Newton and Paiva, an acquisition. Rosana will talk a bit more about it later. Very good acquisition, well selected, as well as Edufor. We brought two acquisitions, relatively small, but with great importance to our portfolio. Finally, our expansion in medicine, 474 more seats. We practically increased by a third the size of our availability, practically without spending money. This is a tradition of ours in medicine. We have been very strong in Mais Médicos 1 and Mais Médicos 2. We delivered our commitments not only to the government, but also to the city halls and students, which gives us the highest rate of use of additional seats. So 474 vacancies, practically 360 came from the expansion of operations that we already had with the cost of CapEx that we need to make this expansion. Again, very robust operation from a portfolio that is very good, that has good and growing profitability, generating results both in terms of net income and cash flow for shareholders, and also very relevant operations, very relevant growth last year, in line with what we told you at the Yduqs Day that we would deliver and good capital allocation. So let's start moving into operations, talking about Idomed. We talked about premium, but a lot of people said that they wanted to have better visibility of what Idomed is and Ibmec is. We decided to publicize that separately. Those that follow premium altogether in the release, you will find this line, but we decided to separate both. And Idomed, strong growth, I think from the beginning, a two-digit growth, both in net revenue and EBITDA and the total student base. Revenue growing 16%, EBITDA for the year growing 23%. But I think here the main news is, in the side of EBITDA, is the resumption of the 50% margin, which we had before 2023, and that we expect to be replicated going forward. Student base continues to grow. Important to remind you that we have a lot of people here, relatively young medical school. As I said, a third of our seats moved into the group this year. So when we have one third of the new seats, they're freshmen. They'll get to the second, third year. Well, we'll start having people. Nobody's going to graduate. Natural growth that is contracted that we have here. This is applies for the 474 seats, but also applies to the others we had previously. So this 14% reaching 9,600 students. This is the great driver of growth in medical schools. A ticket that we have a bit higher than inflation renewal, both here and at Ibmec, 95 to 97, varies a bit here and there, according to the period. And the highlight is what I mentioned previously, 474 new seats acquired at very low cost for us, which allow us to grow contracted forward. In the coming weeks, there will be need more news from Mais Médicos 3, or more Doctors 3. We are super excited about the process. I think the qualification phase took place very much within what we had planned. And we are excited to come back here to tell you things ahead that are going to happen. Idomed maturing, expanding seats. We had an important acquisition, contracted growth, a very high margin, which is the flagship of our expansion at the moment. Let's look at Ibmec together. Again, it was hidden within premium, an operation that I think many people, when they look, even at home, they are scared when they see the size, 186 million EBITDA that Ibmec generated last year. There's an important growth here. There's a bit of not apples to pears in the fourth quarter. When with the 40% margin that we see here, there's 126 million EBITDA. This is the reality of IBMEC. This is what we see. We have a growth of 9% in undergraduate, 40% in total. There is very important growth happening both at IBMEC Faria Lima, IBMEC in Brasília, and Rio. They have important evolution as well. Tickets is always evolving a bit above inflation and renew, as I said, it amend from 95 to 97, small temporal variations around that. So very important operation for us, not only isolatedly, but it helps us a lot in the portfolio as a whole. When you take the knowledge science academy generated within IBMEC, this is passed on through teaching to the entire system, an operation that has great importance within our portfolio, not only for the profitability, as you can see here, but also for fitting very well into this academic excellence that we generate in the group as a whole. Let's talk a bit about digital. We had a tough year, very similar to 2022, with little price elasticity. When we have little price elasticity, we prefer to increase prices to build a better next year, which exactly what happened in 22. And then we had 23, a year in which we had more elasticity. We worked with lower prices. We had very good intake. And 24 has a double effect of this, a good year for 23 with generating bad debt, a higher transfer. We brought the table to talk about this. But we said, calm down. In the second half, we're going to resume the profitability we had, which actually happened, a year of little elasticity. And we prefer to work with higher prices. So the reflection of 24 has a combination, just as in 23. Everything went well. Intake coming very strong. Prices 22 were higher. And we had levels of bad debt interest was lower. So we inherit prices from 23 that are lower. Average prices are lower, you inherit a higher bad debt, higher transfers, and things started to return to reality, to normality in the second half of the year. So when we look at the year in which we move sort of sideways in revenue, we had a more evident EBITDA loss that is concentrated the first three quarters. In the fourth, there is already a recovery happening and a base that moved sideways with a certain price loss, which we had always been talking about as a reflection of low prices practiced in 23. Renew again, even quarter renewal, that is the level. Obviously, it's a nice evolution, 2.4 points more, but it depends very much on better intake going forward on an intake that is a drop versus 23. But remembering that we are practicing higher prices than we had been practicing among the seven largest, it is due to the higher medium-term price for students. And again, this is already a smaller drop than we had in the other quarters. So looking ahead, we're excited about what we see in distance learning, this curve that we're seeing now. And I think it's not just us. There is a bit of a market. Maybe we're more rigid than this price issue than the rest of the market, but the market as a whole is feeling it. We understand this is a temporary thing. It is not something that worries us. We have more than 30 million Brazilians who have completed high school and do not have higher education and could benefit a lot from this. And this is typical distance learning customers. I think this is not a concern going forward at all. I think it is a moment that we're facing and we are very excited about what lies ahead. Let's talk about on campus. Again, we had an increase in the base. I think the great highlight we have here, an increase in the base versus the previous year. I think we came year after year showing a decrease in the base. This year was the first year in which we brought an increase in the base. There is an important movement, which is we're taking semi on campus to our hubs. When you do that, we are increasing the capillarity of this offer. And this is very good for us. Our semi on campus was restricted to campi or campuses. This is very important or strong expansion that is happening outside our campuses. In general, we're managing to move sideways. We are succeeding both in terms of revenue and in terms of EBITDA. This fourth quarter is not an issue that worries. We had extraordinary factors, both in the fourth quarter last year that helped and in the fourth quarter of 2024 that hindered us. So this is not a fair comparison. This margin moving sideways, 22, 21. With prices, I think it's important to bring this chart back. We have pre-pandemic prices higher than pandemic prices. This dark green down here in the chart is decreasing while it decreases. It has a downward price pressure. By the time the students graduate, I have the price of the pandemic that I increase the number of students who are here, and the ticket of students who are joining after pandemic is higher than the tickets of students who entered or joined during the pandemic. So it's a matter of time. We're resisting this downward pressure of those students that are graduating. We have an upward pressure, post-pandemic students with higher prices than in the pandemic world. Renew again. Very similar, 81 to 83. That's a number that has varied, doesn't have great relevance here either. I'm going to turn over to Rossana to talk to you about our financial part of our results. I'll be right back. Thank you, Eduardo. We move to the net revenue slide. We see the business growth 4% year over year, with highlights obviously to our premium businesses, as Eduardo said, both Ibmec and Idomed. We highlight the increase in their share in the total, 3 percentage points more in this quarter this year versus last year. A significant increase, the two of our businesses that have higher margin. You will see that in the proportion of EBITDA becomes even more relevant. Cost and expenses, it's been major focus for us in the second semester. We have been working on several lines. In addition, there were lines that we already knew had a consequence of reduction given the phenomena that we had been happening in revenue in previous semesters. So we, as Eduardo said, we entered the semester with expenses to transfer to hubs that appear here in the line. Very high cost given the very strong intake of 23. We had a delayed effect of this impact. The hubs are always, or centers are always remunerated by the result of this previous semester's funding. So we entered this first semester of 24 with a high, very volume of transfers. We were indicating that this would be corrected second half of 24, returning to normal levels. We conclude with a relevant drop in cost, part of which is relevant to this transfer to hubs or centers. Aqui. And here we have as we've been commenting, we are developing that. We're going to see specific slide. All the allocations that we saw there in the cost, well, happened in the second semester. Same thing in the third quarter, happening the same way. Well, M&S, also bad debt dropping, considering the initiatives we have, comparing the regarding as a percentage of NOR. And we have the improvement of services to our students and also less intake that happened over 24, reducing the part of this, which is our longest term revenue, improving the profile, but that is a consequence of renting or lease, which has long been a form of efficiency of our business, another of the movement of efficiency along with G&A and other expenses. Here we see, as a result, the EBITDA growing 15% in the quarter. Again, highlighted, as I said, both for Ibmec and Idomed, but the digital, as Eduardo presented in our slide, recovering the margin that we had lost throughout the first half, mainly due to the factors I mentioned in the previous slide. And on-campus part here with a difference in expenses in the third, fourth quarter, both in 23 and 24, strongest references, the on-campus margin in the quarter with a small drop from 22 to 21%. We expect a stabilization of this margin from this quarter. Moving into the net profit slide, certainly the number that has been our greatest focus throughout the year. We said at the Educs Day that this would become the company's priority, where we would look most net profit and cash. So we're very happy to arrive now at the end of the year, delivering the guidance that we agreed with the market in the second quarter this year. We have earnings per share 1.73, considering the actual shares that we are finalizing ex-treasury at the end of the year. Even if we made the adjustment by the number of shares at the time of Edux Day, it would be 1.65, also within the guidance we gave to the market. This great profit growth, 138 million from 1 year to the next, greatly benefited by the operating leverage of the business. As we had been saying, the growth of EBITDA from basically direct growth of net income, we can see that in the opening that we made for the fourth quarter, with an increase of 50 million in EBITDA, goes down to net income and makes 433 growth in net income in the quarter. Also benefited from the improvement in the financial result and a symbolic turnaround of G&A for the first time having a depreciation. Yeah, well, our CapEx curve had already turned. We had been reducing our CapEx, not only as a percentage of revenue, but also nominally. It took longer to reach depreciation. Now we can see depreciation, and this is how we project it looking ahead. So those are the three main levers that are driving this profit composition, which once again delivered the guidance we promised on YDUQS Day. Now we come to another super important slide of our presentation, our master number. We talked about profit, but the final focus of the organization is always cash generation. This is a business that has capacity to be a great cash generator. We are setting up the organization for this, and we reached the number of 362 million reais of shareholder cash flow generation. This after CapEx, after financial results. It's a very strong number that we see with an even more positive outlook for next year. This was reinforced during the fourth quarter result of 151 million reais, positive result above market expectations in general, greatly supported by positive variation in working capital with CapEx in line with what we had been talking about, lower mainly as percentage of revenue, an improvement in the financial result throughout the year. There is a time shift in the third quarter, but over the year, great gain in the financial results contributing to this very strong number of 362 million reais. Just to stop here at working capital, two main lines, receivables helped by our improvements in the recovery process that has been constant, delivering this improvement in the profile of accounts receivable in general. And the second point of accounts payable, that was a number that was punctually negative or specifically negative, both in the fourth quarter of 2023 and first quarter 2024. There was greater concentration of payments. We renegotiated contracts seeking to extend payment terms throughout the year, and this positively reflects here, and we believe this is a structural change. So we actually start 2025 with a comparison profile with the first half of 2024 that is super positive practically on all lines. So we're very confident that the first half of 2025, as well as the whole year, will be a very strong semester of cash generation, especially in comparison to the previous year. Quickly to the right-hand side, CapEx, we mentioned that it will be very much in line. We had given the guidance for 150, doing a little below, falling as a percentage of revenue, walking through our medium-term guidance of reaching below 8% of a total CapEx as percentage of revenue. And you see the average receipt or receivables period remaining stable, even with an increase in DIS penetration in funding or intake. So we see with the reversal of this trend over the year, you have less DIS from now, from 2025. So we have a better receipt period consequently for working capital. This slide still on shareholder cash flow. We wanted to have a few variations of net debt, which is a very traditional measurement that sell sides use a lot to show what was done with the funds generated. So the 362 million that we're showing shareholder cash flow generated against the net debt of 2023 would take the balance to 2,400,000. What did we do with these resources from then on? Exactly what we said what we would do on YDUQS Day, adding to a buyback program, which was an opportunistic program launched by market conditions that ended in March, as it do already said, 300 million reais, super aggressive program in comparison with the industry. It is a very relevant share buyback program. We strongly believe that this program will generate a lot of value for shareholders in the long term. It consumed cash in the second half, fourth quarter 2024, 146 million, and we only completed it in the first quarter of 2024, as communicated in material fact, reaching 300 million. Second thing we did, we paid dividend 80 million, still close to the minimum, as it has been our policy commented on YDUQS Day to pay the regulatory minimum until we reach our goal of reaching a leverage of one time net debt EBITDA. We followed the strategy and an M&A program that we were going to be very opportunistic, make acquisitions that were accretive. So I do mention the two acquisitions, Newton Paiva, Dufour. We believe that they generate a lot of value for the business at a very reasonable value. So we get to the net debt of 2024, so it's important for you to understand this bridge and the use of resources very much in line with our use of capital strategy. Let's look at our debt profile. This debt-debt spread curve constantly falling, which helps us to continue helping to counterbalance, at least partially, the rise in the Selic, which will be negative in 2025, a super important value. Let's look at leverage, which even with a buyback program, we managed to reduce leverage. If we had excluded this buyback program, it would be even greater reduction, but we follow our line, super disciplined to reach our leverage again at 1.61, one time net debt EBITDA. So we have this target on the horizon. Super comfortable cash position, 1 billion reais. And then 2025 debt, totally equated. No maturity throughout the year. We're always looking and working ahead and ensuring that we are entering the year smoothly so that we can take the opportunity or tap into the opportunities in terms of credit markets. So next maturity will only be 2026 and values are super well equated with our current cash. Now I'll turn over to Eduardo, who will continue the presentation. Thank you very much, Rossano. This picture is something we like to bring to those who are starting to look at us, but to give you a perspective as to where we are. This chart shows, I think the English word is the compounder. And net revenue that grows 9% a year with margins above 30% is even in the worst crisis of 2020, 21, paying dividends every year since 2007, especially 24, 25, with very relevant returns for shareholders. If we add last year's dividends with the buyback program of over 220 million reais, what we are proposing for the general meeting this year, what we made of the buyback, it's been concluded, we're talking about more than 300 million reais going back to shareholders. The next slide also gives a very interesting perspective of the business. We made a little change to it. We put Ibmec separately, a little to highlight this growth trajectory of Ibmec. So those top lines are the LTM adjusted EBITDAs of the businesses. Note that since 2020, the on-campus that we had, the dominance here in our results, we had a very strong drop. We reached the low of 400 million reais. We went up a little last year. Now it's about 450. And the other businesses with relevant growth. The digital, which is the second line, starts at 443, was above 650. Medicine started 268, more than doubled to 581. Ibmec, we started trajectory here with 43 million reais, almost tripling this year. So those are different businesses in a portfolio that is very good at a time when we have a crisis, a portfolio that is exceptional at a time of growth, at a time of economic recovery, at a time of breathing as 2023 was. And we're sure that others will come soon. On the lower left, in net profit side is also very interesting. We had an interest rate growth, an increase in our indebtedness, which affected a lot in the years of 22. We look at LTM 22, 150, 139, with a peak of interest that we paid more than 600 million reais. We equated it, as Rossano showed very well, our entire debt structure. We were generating cash to reduce our debt, which allowed us to reach 480 million reais in the net profit this year in a trajectory that we're looking ahead, still see growing, as we said, in the Dux Day guidance. Operating cash flow, we reached 1,260 this year, a large increase versus the second quarter of last year. The fourth quarter also very good. So this is a medium-term perspective of the business. Looking forward, what do we have here? Our commitment to ESG. People say that ESG is no longer fashionable. This does not exist to us. We were born 55 years ago with a very strong social side in our veins. We started calling it ESG just recently. The content was already here, which is part of what we believe and part of what we are. So here's a photo of Claudia receiving an award for the best company to work for from Exame magazine, the Exame Award for People Management. But there are other important highlights. We were renewed as AA at MSI, one of the rare education companies in the world that has this ESG rating at MSI, the first educational company to be included in the ESG Integrity Yearbook. We have a prime status in the ISS. We joined three new indices: Teva, Women in Leadership, and S&P B3, IGCX. We have an increase in several ratings. We have the Women on Board seal. Our institute impacted more than 2 million people last year. We have advanced a lot compared to 23. The Rede de Valor, which is a program started by our employees and embraced by both the institute and the company, which gives scholarships, helping pro-INI students to stay in the medical school at Edux, has already graduated 49 doctors last year, and we have 270 more scholarship holders today benefited. So this is never a matter of timing or market pressure. This is what we are, what we will continue to be, and it's what we believe in. I wanted to talk to you a bit about past. I think it's important. In the second and third quarters, we talked to you about what was going to happen forward. I wanted to very quickly show you that was actually what happened. We said that transfers would fall in the fourth quarter to a lower number than previous year, and we're showing this happened. Same thing for bad debt. And actually, M&S, we went back to previous year. Same thing of G&A and financial results. We had relevant advance for last year, which also happened. So as mentioned to you, we were going to get to above 1.60 in EPS. We reached 1.73 with the share and the number of shares we closed last year, even more than we have today. And then guidance days, we also exceeded the number we had there. We did a buyback program with over 30 million shares, and we've canceled 35 million shares, even more than were in the program. So we have a final balance of 262 million outstanding shares. Starting to close here, the main messages: an EBITDA growth close to 2023 of 10%, the fourth quarter, fantastic growth was last year. The margin evolving, and this margin evolution again has our discipline, but what is contracted by our portfolio, a very important development of net income. We came to guidance. Well, financial, fantastic job of the financial this year as return the cost of the debt, where we reduce the spread. We have no maturity before 2026, delivering a cash flow to shareholders, a strong growth compared to the previous year, strong compared to the industry, a number that is very close to a very high percentage of our net income, a very high percentage of our market cap. And the growth here, both on the side of new medical seats, again, very cheap growth for us, as well as two acquisitions that we are very proud of and already starting to give very important results to us. Well, in addition to all the pride that we have to have delivered the guidance as we had planned, a lot within what we had planned, some things came out worse than we expected, other things were better than we predicted. I think this sums up well what the year has been for us. When people look at us, they say, well, net debt ended up similar to what was the previous year. What did we do with this strong cash generation? In addition to all the medical side that I've mentioned, which is capital allocation that is extremely efficient, we had a return value to shareholders with 146 million reais of buyback last year, plus 80 million of dividends paid. Two acquisitions that were excellent here. So it shows we have been super consistent, keeping our leverage, reducing it even more towards what we've managed or mentioned. Not that we managed to get return to shareholders, but to create important growth opportunities for the next few years. What do we see in 2025? Important growth in semi on campus, important growth in medicine, important growth in IBMEC, keeping our costs structure lean at a cash conversion level even higher than we had this year, in a strategy of allocation of capital very solid, as we shared with you before. We've brought an additional chart, which is regarding our fundraising or our funding. Well, 5 to 10%, put a little clock here and there, but I think what's the easiest way to share with you is to tell you what it is like today. We got at the end of the last week, the 13th of last year, 83% of the funding had been completed. In the funding of last year, we had 67% of the intake was from digital, and 10% of intake was semi on campus, 23% was from on campus. We got it right, taking semi to the centers where centers people looking for distance learning. That they leave with semi on campus, which has a ticket much higher than distance learning. So the ensemble of the 13th was going up 2% versus last year's, with a 6% down variation on campus and 10% down on digital, but semi on campus practically doubling. When you look back, when I talked about on campus, the important evolution that we had semi on campus on our base and this intake. This is going even further. So when you look at this mix, what do we have in this mix? The semi on campus taking a bit of the on campus space, but a lot of digital space with tickets much higher than digital. So we're excited with this intake that we have ahead. 17 of final stretch is still reasonable time ahead. So there is an end of a battle here, but we're excited as to what is coming for 2025, what we see in terms, as Rossano said, of net profit, evolution, cash generation, both operating and cash flow for our shareholders. And I think this is a good beginning of the year for us. Okay, thank you very much. I've forgotten. People are going back to the studio. Back here, they're working on the presentation that Rossano and I made. Promising me that in 2 hours on our website, you will find us speaking English and Mandarin. A little later, perhaps tomorrow, you will see us speaking French and other languages. If you want to hear us in other languages, if you're curious to see the artificial intelligence technology working to do the translation, or if you want to watch this presentation again, it will be there soon. So thank you very much. Thank you very much for your patience, for your trust. For investing in us. Thank you very much for your time. Let's move on to questions. We will now start the Q&A session for investors and analysts. If you wish to ask any question, please press raise your hand. If your question is answered, you can leave the queue clicking on lower hand. Our first question is from Jessica Miller from JP Morgan. Good morning, everyone. Parente Rossano, thank you for taking my questions. I have two. First, on I'd like to better understand on the margin of Idomed. Parente mentioned 50%. I'd like to understand if this level is feasible considering the increase in seats coming from lawsuits and also in the Mais Médicos program. Those seats, you understand that they will pressure tickets. How do you see that? And regarding CapEx, CapEx is kept at 8%. Won't you have to have more investments to receive the seats? And if you could also mention a bit on the expectation of cash generation for the first quarter 2025. Thank you very much. Hi, Jessica. Very good questions. Thank you very much. Happy to have you back. I'm going to start here talking about Idomed margin CapEx, and then I'll ask Silvio to help me. There is an imbalance of supply and demand here. There is more demand than supply in medical school. So the smaller it is, the smaller pressure we have. So we haven't seen this in the short term. Again, we brought Idomed, fantastic work that Silvio made with a brand that has a strong differentiation. When you have that, you can get premium on competition. We get that everywhere we have operations. So this may be when we look at the past growth of ticket, it won't happen ahead. Our own projections here, we put medicine ahead of inflation a bit more, but it's not the 15-20% that we saw happening in the past. On the other hand, we're very excited. I'd like Silvio to talk about this as well, from what we see, not only in terms of seats. I said something silly, not a third of the seats. We increased by 30%. So 1/4 of the total seats came from the addition of seats this year. So a lot of new things coming ahead. So we have a great contracted growth, and we have great outlook for the Mais Médicos 3 program. So if it comes, well, the growth will be marginal. The impact on price will be much more than offset, well, by the number of seats. Again, I think it is possible to keep the margin. And on the other hand, when you think about ROIC, people paying a lot for seats, we are following public policies. We're going to the inner states, the countryside, working on what the government has in mind and deliver that. Those that do that very well and end up being awarded by the investment that is relatively low with a great margin ahead. If you think in terms of ROIC ahead, this is a very good investment. Silvio, help me add to that. Can you hear me all right? Just very briefly, Jessica, adding to do we see that the differentiation has been significant when you look at the more challenging market because of the medical school seats? You have the tradition, a family decides to have a student in a school with a higher ticket, considering what this will bring in terms of return regarding the quality of the diploma and future possibilities. So in the markets where we increase the number of seats, we have been observing that the differentiation, the history background has made a great difference. The example is Edu4. You see, we had an excellent taking of seats, showing that in our strategy of M&A and the choice M&A and Mais Médicos, our choice is choose a region where there's a but an interesting market potential where it's possible for you to have a medical school with differentiation that in the end, with conversion, the students choose to be at a school that has a higher ticket and has been new received in renewal. We have a better historical renewal going over inflation with a ticket of upper classmen. They do not drop out considering the quality and the high value of a medical school that we have. So those attributes make a difference. And we were organizing ourselves as well to keep the margin using certain levers if necessary. In a more challenging scenario, we have mapped all the levers as possible changes in the change of the curriculum, number of hours, things that do not change the quality of the course, do not diminish the attributes, but perhaps make it more feasible, and that would offset possible losses of margin points. So we don't actually see in the short term any kind of pressure or loss of margin because of those two elements, differentiation and the levers of offsetting possible margin loss. Okay, Ruthana, can you help me with CapEx and margin generation in first quarter? Well, it's great to have you back, Jessica. On CapEx, we're estimating CapEx. We're forecasting CapEx without considering the specific investments for Mais Médicos. We hope to be very successful in the Mais Médicos 3 cycle, see how this is impacted, depending on where number of campuses or new campuses we're going to open. Anyhow, it's important to consider that usually We make the contracts of new campuses to build to suit. Campex has no filling. We make it for general infrastructure. It's smaller than traditional expansion, and it happens in a graded way. Or staggered way. So we're going to start the works in the third, fourth quarter. And impact again is not so relevant because we're only going to focus on the filling of the campus, and it happens in a staggered way in a process that takes over a year. So the results have to be weighted, but the forecast is to get to 2025. Our midterm guidance is 8% of the revenue on cash generation of first quarter. We're very excited. All the levers that we attained the fourth quarter for cash improvement, they remain 2025, especially in the first quarter. So we're very positive regarding cash for the first quarter. All the lines that have been responsible for the good results of fourth quarter remain. No line has been impacted in the fourth quarter of 24 is different in 2025. Most on the contrary, this should be strong factors of strength for cash generation in the year. Just add a tip, when we look at first quarter, second quarter last year, they were abnormal years in terms of cash generation. So we have a strong cash generation compared to previous years or last year. Perfect. Thank you. Well, thank you very much for the welcoming words, and thank you for your answers. Our next question is from Samuel Alves from BTG.
Good morning, Parente, Rossano, Silvio, and other directors. Two questions on our side. The first is a bit on the company's expansion dynamics from the structural standpoint, taking as a reference the cycle of intake that you've shown for early 2025. Do you assume this as a structural trend, digital dropping, on-campus dropping, and semi-on-campus growing? Do you think this is more or less the structural look and feel of 2025? Of course, an expansion at Ibmec and medicine. This is the first question. The second question is a bit on guidance for 2025. I'd like to know from the company if it reiterates the guidance it was presented on the last investor day, or despite the challenging interest rate scenario, if this guidance is still realistic. Thank you.
Thank you, Samuel. Can you hear me? Well, what happens? This is super important. When you look at our portfolio, it ensured growth on any scenario. I think it's being tested at to the limit of its stress through COVID. Well, we've had test after test since 2014, but I think the pandemic was the great test, and people recognize that a lot. When people think about the portfolio, they say, well, this is good. It defends at a good time. Okay, sure. But the main feature of our portfolio is to hit at a good time, or to we have a positive relationship with the economy, as it happened in 2023, as we expected that should happen in 2024. It did not. We had an intake that moved sideways. It was for distance learning and on campus. So we think it's going to be strong. Well, the pace of 2025 is going to be like, as you said, semi on campus will be strong. Distance learning losing, but with great quote marks, that is losing to a semi on campus that has higher ticket, and on campus moving sideways with the price movement that we consider important. So this is the phase of 2025, 26. We're very excited for 2026. 25 is not going to be a bad year. On the contrary, we're going to follow our trajectory, generating a lot of cash, evolving on cash, having an important evolution in net income. This is the levers of IDOMED, SEMI, and Ibmec, as you mentioned. Marcel, would you like to add?
Just add, we see this Semyon campus in a very positive eyes. So when we look at our portfolio very much linked to what we had on digital, it tends to add value to us. We're monitoring it. Obviously, we address all the part of expansion of growth in on campus with specific care. We make the decision of being more conservative in terms of price. We haven't started any price war on the on-campus sphere, so we look at it carefully. But again, the dynamics is what is being set for 2025 and 2026. We should have a recovery. We should resume growth on campus scene. On the guidance, Samuel, we revise our guidances at the end of the results of the first quarter. We're waiting for the end of intake, closing the first quarter, which gives us more confidence to revise guidances. We propose to do the annual cycles, that gives us more stability for our vision. Once we close the first quarter, we're going to have more accurate possibility of revising the guidance or keeping it operationally. We're very close to what we imagined. There are no reasons to change the guidance vision. Of course, there are extraordinary impacts. Selic increase that was not expected at the original time of the guidance. We'll see how this indirectly impacts the economy. The intake results, we're going to consider all the indicators to evaluate whether we revise the guidance after the results of the first quarter. As I said, operationally, we're very confident on the points we brought. Some are even more positive than we imagined. So let's wait the closing of first quarter to talk about guidance again. Thank you for your question. Thank you. Our next question is from André Salles from UBS.
Good morning, Parente Sonia. I'd like to explore the intake profile and impact on the average ticket. You said that the semi on the centers, it goes to a hub above distance learning. How does it compare to flex or semi on campus or traditional? And on the commercial pitch, what is the difference between semi on the centers and flex? Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Andrea. Marcel, I'm going to ask you for help to answer Andrea more clearly. Thank you, Andrea, for your question. When we look at the, your question was regarding the price we have of flex with semi. Overall, semi on campus against distance learning is about, or is it between 1.6 times on the base distance learning? This is what we have on total. Regarding flex, this is product is 30, 40% of the amount. It's those are more or less the parameters. If you quickly search the company's website, you can get more details. So this is more or less this price range for the centers. This is very strong in terms of additional revenue, especially with the product growing and the demand that we have seen in the past few months. The difference, well, the second question was on the difference of the product. I don't know if Haroldo would like to comment. I may comment regarding product difference. Flex was an all partner centers, but Flex are courses that have virtual labs. That may bring the on campus to 1 or 2 weeks, 2 days a week, to all our Estácio partners. So this is basically it. So we bridge a gap that we had on our portfolio with some competitors, and we add a lot both in terms of price and product availability. And all our partnering centers of Estácio, adding classes on campus in health, we do in also area of education, engineering. We have opportunities for new opportunities with partners. Let me add to Marcel. And then look, you have more semi on campus on the mix. The semi is eating or consuming part of distance learning. The guy was doing distance learning, wants to study business administration, and decides to do semi. And this has a positive evolution on the ticket. Let me make a wide guess, 100 reais above than distance learning. So this is positive for our mix. In addition, we have developments in the price that we are charging both on campus and distance learning compared to what we had in the past, and the same on the campuses. The difference here is that semi on the center is cheaper than on the campus. So it's a different experience. Semi on the center is closer to our competitors. You are on the center, you will have a class, some classes, the different experience that you have on the campus with everything that entices being on a campus, your experience, socialization, a different way of studying, which is different, not better or worse. It adapts to specific people. Each one has their own will and ability to study in one way or another. Well, all in all, well, bringing up our average ticket when you look at the mix as a whole, even if it's a lower ticket than the semi that we were doing in a stronger way.
Okay, perfect. It is clear. Thank you. Thank you, Andrea.
Our next question is from Gustavo Miele from Goldman Sachs.
Hi, can you hear me now?
Hi, Parente, Osano, directors. Good morning. Thank you for the presentation. I'd like to ask two questions here, please. The first, I'd like to ask you to explore the bad debt topic looking into 2025. I understand this line is a result of micro and macro components, where we see that very strong in the part of collection and the change in the DIS. It helps your bad debt. I'd like to understand how you see the macro context impacting this line for 2025. If you should think about strong dilutions looking at this year vis-a-vis the level we saw in 2024, what would be the net of those micro and macro themes? The second one, discussing capital allocation. How do you see the M&A agenda competing with this return of cash to shareholders in 2025? That's this because in 2025, we're going to have a higher interest rate level as we had last year, and I understand this can drive more targets for the company. So since you are a consolidator of market, how do you see M&As vis-a-vis the level of 2024? Those are the two points. Thank you, Gustavo. I'm going to ask Rossano to answer the two questions. Well, welcome. I think it's your first call with us. Good question. Well, for bad debt, we have a very positive trend, as you mentioned, on the micro level, but it's not only because of the lower penetration of DIS,
But because of all our intake flows, they have been very positive over 2024 and extending to 2025. We see this in the first quarter of 2025 already happening. This happens both with a drop of default, the improvement of inactive credit, and operating factor is that is important, that is stable and positive. It's been improving sequentially, the increase in student satisfaction, the improvement of renewal process from choosing disciplines, the delivery of documents, the improvement of the product delivered that leads students to stay. So this renewal flow is super important for delinquency and bad debt in higher education. This has been contributing over the years. It's intensified 2024. We see it with positive eyes for 2025. The macro so far has not negatively impacted. We don't see this impact. We see the impact of macro reducing the availability of income of the prospect that impacts intake, but we haven't seen that in a relevant way in our current students. They keep on renewing. Delinquency has been kept relatively stable. It hasn't been impacted. Let's see if there are changes. Maybe we don't see that yet. The first intake and renewal are stronger, but this year, this period that is very relevant and strong for the year, we don't see that, as we did not see a negative impact to bad debt. So we're very positive with the outlook for the year. Eduardo, would you take the second? You're usually more seasoned in this answer. Why don't you do that? I can try that. Our goal is to reduce our net debt. So we have, a high Selic rate. Well, Selic was more favorable at the time when we did our Edux Day. So this is the main focus of company, trying to reduce leverage. This will continue to be our focus. At Edux Day, we said that we would be opportunistic in terms of that and the possibility of M&As with Dufour, Nilton Paiva. Well, we see deals that may be bigger. They are super accretive in a very short period of time. They end up helping us, but they strengthen the path to deleverage. They increase EBITDA at a low investment cost. If we keep seeing those opportunities, we'll be surgical in tapping into those deals. Our main focus is still reducing leverage. Share buyback program was a decision due to opportunity at the time. We're sure that we'll generate a lot of value for shareholders in the short term. This keeps on being our priority. Excellent. Very clear, Rossano. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next question is from Mauricio Cepeda from Morgan Stanley.
Hi, Eduardo Rossano, other directors. Good morning. Thank you for the time. We have two questions here. The first, going back to 2025 guidance, I know that you wait a bit, you may change it, but actually, what had been shared before for 2025 was significantly higher than 2024. You came to 2024 at the low end, at the range you shared, it was 160 and 90. You came to 165, but for 25, it would be between 2 and 3, much higher. While we see the interest rates that are not easy, what do you think could be the drivers for you to get to there? At this environment, well, considering that you have this ambition of having a 2025 year better than 2024. The second question is a bit more structural of business positioning. We see that once again, we've had a bit of this contribution of premium to give more stability in your business lines. Both medicine and Ibmec have helped a lot. This had helped happened in the past. Well, premium has been saving,
because semi on campus has not expanded. Is it the case for you to think about traditional schools with much higher tickets to actually increase this share in those years in which Class C has not taken off? And linked to this structural part, capital structure, you talked about focus of reducing debt. Why do you still have this thing of distributing dividends and buyback? Your debt is lower enough. R16 is above 2. It's significant. Why not prioritize reducing debt now rather than distributing dividends now? Thank you.
Thank you for your question, Mauricio. Guidance 25 higher than 24. 24, I think there were lots of people we were not going to meet it. We told you about the confidence we had. I used the chart here in this presentation. It didn't make very much sense because we needed in the second, third quarter, we needed to show you why we would get there. And obviously, when we gave you the guidance in the past, six dot oh was floor. So lots of things happened in 2024. Intake in the second semester was lower than expected. Increase that was relevant in interest rates did not lead us to where we thought we would get. When we look at 2025, again, as Rossano said, operations will keep on evolving in certain areas in a more conservative way, but from the operation standpoint, it's not be we're not close to where we were. When you think you're going to get to 2 and you get to 170 some next year to get to 2, you have a challenge, but we're good at attaining or reaching our challenges. Something important here, I think we had consensus what we've shown this morning. We have to talk a lot about cash generation, go to your question, and then I'll ask Rossano to add to what I might have missed. When you have strong cash generation, as we've had this year, as we have been, as we think we're going to have next year, it's very reasonable for you to award those that are here with us. If you look at the ensemble of R$150 million, the dividends that we're proposing to the general meeting, R$154 million that we are have had a buyback this year. So we're talking about wild guess 15,120 per share. This is what we can have, and we did a lot of math behind that. I invite you and everyone that follows us to look very close with a magnifying glass, this cash generation. This is going to give us freedom to choose and be brave to do two small M&As that were very cool, to follow on our price policy that we've had all those years, and to keep on the buyback program. So I think it's a decision that has not been difficult to take. When you get to the level of the operation that we have, or we look at return, the people say, no, well, PCA is not 7. It's one of those deals, and you can keep the yield that we have in the business with strong growth perspective. We are competitive in the Brazilian market, yes, despite this very peculiar moment we're going through. Rossano, help me out.
Well, thank you for your sophisticated question, Cepeda. On guidance, you're talking about this aggressiveness, the growth. You have to notice that with the number of shares that we closed the year, the operational profit was 173. We used 165 was guidance. The real one was 173. 1.73 vis-a-vis 118 is a 47% growth. We grew
47% from 23 to 24 for 173 to the bottom of the guidance, to not 15%. I did not do the math. It's smaller growth than was delivered in 2024. But part of the growth will be supported by the buyback program. 24 people benefited from half of the buyback program, and the other half, over 150 million, was executed in the first quarter, will benefit even more. Even if it were equal profit 173, it grows a bit more. So, you know, you have a lot of challenges. Of course, you have an impact of Selic on the financial results. It's an anchor that will bring us back or down. But we keep all this trend of this operational push of the fourth quarter. We are very confident in the growth of this company, as we see in the Samuel's answer. We wait for the first quarter to see whether we move the window. If not, we are very confident from the operations side. We only have positive reasons looking ahead. Your second topic on the buyback, it was complex. Understand they were questioning where we were buying back, paying dividends, and the focus is reducing leverage. Dividends were very close to the minimum, 25% of adjusted net income, 120 million, we're paying a bit over 150. Again, very much based on the trust and confidence of the cash position we have today and the outlook ahead. And the buyback in a short-term perspective, Selic is very high. If you were thinking about short-term, perhaps it would be better to focus only on this deleveraging, not doing a buyback in a more long-term view. The buyback program generates a lot of value to shareholders. We have Selic cycles. They go up and down in short cycles, even in Brazil. But this share value, we don't know when we're going to get that. And no, I think everybody would agree to us that this price does not reflect an operating performance of the company. We have a squeezing of multiples overall, not only in education, but in the stock exchange overall, in the mid-small caps. And we felt it was a very important opportunity for shareholders to have this buyback program now. And we understand that in short, very short term, we're going to have a very positive return, even with the leaky at the level where it is. I think I've gone through everything. I don't know, remember, can't remember. Well, the premium schools, why? Yeah, good. Let me take that one. So it's just a matter of changing money. You buy a premium school. To buy a premium school is a lot of money. I prefer to buy a wonderful portfolio, not only with premium school, with an ability of, you know, having a great increase in any recovery of Class C. It's very good. I think buyback is the best choice. So any school that wants to buy IBMEC, you know, we're going to charge a fortune and they're not for sale.
To keep our portfolio, to buy back our portfolio that is flattened, is the best investment we can think of.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you, Eduardo Rossano. Thank you. Our next question is from Flavio Yoshida from Bank of America.
Hi, good morning, Parente, Rossano. Congratulations on your results. I'd like to stress again on the intake cycle that you've shown on the presentation. Congratulations on the very interesting slide. My question is regarding margins. I'd like to understand if you could help us understand what we should expect regarding margins, considering semi on campus gaining great share, especially regarding digital. And also, in your minds, what would be the ideal mix between those three modalities? My second question is regarding on-campus ticket. We see a pressure on on-campus ticket, 100% on-campus and semi. And I'd like to understand how much or until when we should expect this ticket to be pressured, because you have been transferring more upperclassmen, and when we should see this effect
bit more relevant in the ticket as a whole. Thank you.
Thank you, Flavio. And congratulations. We had hard times with you, and this is a time when we are very happy with the results, not only of the work of the year, of various years for us to get here.
Margins, we don't think they have relevant changes. Semi on distance learning, but the base is still small. It's been relevant on the intake when you looked at the ensemble, the base is still small. We have an eternal battle of fighting to be ahead of inflation in anything we do. And sometimes we win, sometimes we lose. But again, what grows most on our portfolio are the service lines with greatest margins, Idomed and Ibemec. That tends to favor us. We had a gain of 0.6 percentage point in the margin this year. The bonus was closer to normal. This certainly helps, but Idomed, Ibemec with high margins helps us to with this upward trend. This change in the mix does not have such relevant effect, neither upward or downward. On the other hand, you've asked on the on-campus ticket on the chart. You've seen on the on-campus page I showed the pre-pandemic volume of students on campus dropped by half. It's an anchor you're trying to take off, but there is an anchor keeping you down. We're always increasing the ticket of those that enter, those that are in, but I have a group of much greater ticket group that was here before that brings us down. Or I cannot be accurate in terms of when they're going to graduate. This has an effect on 2025 of canceling the gains we have. 2026, those ties have been loosened so that we can grow. As I said in Jessica's question of our being looking ahead, looking at medical schools going above inflation. And when we look at on campus, we see in our positionings, I'm not giving any guidance in our internal reviews, how we look. The way we look at the future, we see on campus growing above inflation. Thank you.
Let me add just a point here. That's interesting. You know, his question is interesting in the ideal mix. The ideal mix, we unfortunately do not choose. We are in the hands of students. They decide what their choice is. And we, as organizations, this is a key in positioning of edX. It's a higher education company, so we have specialized places. We are a horizontal player that can offer excellent services in the various layers and modalities we offer. So we serve the way very well on campus with FIES growing, then digital, taking this strength and growth in higher education as a whole, the recent growth and high profitability of medicine, and by coming to the portfolio, playing a role in total leadership in this area of premium education. So we are positioned as one of the leaders in each one of the segments and tapping, you know, to trying to surf the waves. Here we have consumers overall using more hybrid situations, and we were able to provide very competitive offers and hybrid models. But that, though, this is our business. You tap into the opportunities of the consumers. This is out of our control, and we're able, as a company focused on higher education, all segments of higher education, we can have competitive quality offers in whatever segment. Super clear. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Flavio.
Our next question is from Luca Marchesini from Itaú BBA.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my question. I'd like to know a bit more about intake and considering this. Does it make sense to have a drop in revenue with a draw a less dis and less distance learning? This more less relevance of dis. Have you encouraged students to hire dis, or dis is still something that is an opt-out
on the part of students, so I understand the commercial part regarding this adhesion. It would be important for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Luca. I'm going to turn over to Rosanna to answer the first and Marcel the second.
Thank you for the question, Luca. A topic that has been more frequent and more popular in our calls. I think it's a bit more knowledge overall. You understand the tool very well. This has always been a very good tool for us to attract students into this project that we believe very much in, which is delivering higher education service. Many students that have difficulty, we know higher education is discretionary for our prospect. This has been a strong attraction tool. We're not acting intentionally to reduce it. What's happening is that over the years, we increased even more the transparency and improving communication as to what the product is, the impact to students. They pay less in the beginning. They will impact their tuition fees later. And they understood the dynamics further. Then at the same time, there's a change in the profile of consumption, not only at Edux, retail overall of the students and consumers preferring a more constant price level, escaping greater variability in prices. In addition, intake that is not so high, that restricts intake to a block of students that perhaps have a profile that is less prone to this. The three factors evolving, they're bringing this reduction of penetration of this. Those three factors seem to carry to 2025. Answering your question, we see less penetration of this in the intake overall. You've asked whether digital having less intake would influence this? Probably yes, if you compare premium, following premium that has no DIS with an intake that is super strong, increasing its share and revenue a bit, digital reducing, and it's a factor that reduces DIS in our revenue as a whole. Have I answered? I think that was a point. Very clear, Rosanna. Thank you very much. So you've asked about opt-out. We haven't changed the tools. We just gave more transparency and made it easier for students to have the choice. They have the option of opting out, but we've just been clearer, more objective regarding those points. Just to add, Rosanna, since the fourth quarter, 100% of our flow, the students decide whether they continue with this or not when they enroll. So they can switch on and off, see what they're going to have of payment flows and decide to have the product or not. In a path of greater transparency, we gave transparency to the decision and future payment flow of students that we think positively to the renewal we're going to have ahead. And this is something we are maturing. Perfect. Thank you very much. Thank you. The Q&A session is ended. We'd like to turn over to Mr. Eduardo Parente so that he can make his final remarks. Well, thank you very much for your trust, for your time. I think that we've had, again, a year that has been the result of, well, many years that have been difficult, and we've reached to a portfolio giving us a very good operational result, with great evolution in net income, especially in cash generation. We did good things with the cash that we generated to you. Very important growth, 30% increase in our medical school seats, low cost, important evolution to a small acquisition. They're going to help us in our future, both New Tom Paiva, 2x EBITDA, is a 4. Very strong on campus and also distance learning. So it affected our price. We were able to pay dividends last year, 80 billion this year. We're going to propose 150, generating a lot of value in the buyback program. So as has been said, we're following the plan. And with a great discipline, great willingness to doing different things differently. And I think
We're going to move on like this, very excited as to what we have ahead, the possibility that we have from this time of strong cash generation, mastering our future with positive feedback as to what we have been doing with your money. Thank you very much. The YDUQS video conference is closed. We thank you all for your participation and wish you all a good day.